And now we're joined by Liam Manning from the Vincent de Paul. Thanks very much, Liam, for taking the time to come and join us this evening. Just maybe let us know how long you've actually been involved with the Vincent de Paul.
Yeah. I must be 20 years now, best part of 20 years. My father was involved for many years before me, my late father, and I took over from him in the Ravensdale, larger Balmacallet, Jenkinstown area.
So it's hereditary, isn't it? Do you have a specific role in Vincent de Paul?
Well, at the moment I don't. Well, I'm just a member, and I have an officership in my own conference. But after I retired from Aircom in 2005, I worked full-time for the society for 3 years. And then I worked part-time for a couple of years after that. So I was involved in the development of the society in the Northeast and Midlands, in the growth and development of the society in many areas. For a few years I was member of the National Finance team in Dublin, and I was involved in training at one stage as well, so I've held a lot of different positions, but I think I'm getting on a bit now.
Would that have involved trying to recruit new members?
New members, yeah. Not, yes, but that's sort of something that is always... The society has about 11,000 members in Ireland. It's the biggest charity in the country. Mm. It has about 1,100 conferences, and we're organised on a 32-county basis. So it's a very, very large organisation. We are part of the Northeast and Midlands area here in Dundalk.
When you say conference, then am I right in thinking that each area of the town would have its own conference, would be they'd look after their own specific area.
A conference is an operational unit of the society. In the Dundalk area, which covers the Cooley Peninsula, Dundalk Town, Haggerstown, Black Rock, Drumiskin, Fochard, and Kilkerley, a sort of a ring around Dundalk. We have 11 conferences. Yeah. We have in the region of about 130 members in those 11 conferences. So we've a substantial presence in the area.
And they'd be specific to their own areas then?
Well, they'd work in their own areas, but there are members who live in one area but work in other areas.
Because that kind of probably leads me on to my next question, is how do you assess people for, how do you know that they're actually in need or that they're not trying to pull a fast one on you or whatever? I presume it's local knowledge would play a big part.
Yeah, local knowledge is huge. Obviously, the more rural the parts of the area that we're talking about, local knowledge would play a bigger part. Yeah. We have parts of the town where sort of poverty is institutionalized to a certain extent, but our members, some of our members are here, members 30, 40 years, they know the people, they know the situation. Local knowledge is a massive source of information.
I suppose if they're in it that long, they're educated enough to know where to look.
Some of the conferences in particular parts of the town would have had occasion to help the same families practically since the society was set up in the 40s. Successive generations would be approaching for assistance.
Is that because people just get used to handouts is probably the wrong word to use, but you know, that there's no incentive for them to move away from that?
That's a very interesting area, you know, but it's a very extensive and large area. We like to think that it's a land of opportunity, but it isn't really for very many people. It is very difficult for people. There is a huge lack of social mobility at the moment in North Louth, in Ireland, because of the huge recession. So it is very difficult for families to extricate themselves from the tradition of unemployment.
I suppose the jobs aren't there for
people. The jobs simply aren't there. Like we all remember back in the 70s and 60s when I was brought up in Dundalk, and there was 1,800 people in Echo and 600 in Harp Lager and PJ Carls. That level of employment doesn't exist to that level anymore. There is some very good businesses, but it is much more difficult to get a job now. There's no question about
it. It was similar when I joined the bank, like in 1970, there was a 6-month bank strike, and people were in no hurry back to work because they could get other jobs which financed them while they were in strike.
I mean, it's you do read and hear about people drawing conclusions, which I certainly don't agree with.
Yeah.
It is very difficult. If you were lucky enough to have worked most of your career, you should be very grateful for that.
Yeah,
that's my view. And I can see close up, and, you know, I have five kids myself, four of them are in England, and one in Scotland. That's just the fact of life. If you want to work, you have to leave. You have to move out,
And do you visit people on a regular basis then, or do you just do it when you're asked to do it? Or
well, I mean, people have to approach us. I mean, we can't, we don't operate on the basis that somebody who's living close by somebody will ring us up and tell us, oh, you should call to Mrs. O'Brien.
Right.
Because Mrs. O'Brien may not want that at all. So we would have, but I mean, we have referrals through the church, through priests, through a whole network of other organisations would liaise with us, and we wouldn't call unannounced, but we would always find a way of making a connection between the person who needs help and ourselves, you know.
I suppose that's food hampers would have been a big part of your most recent project.
Well, that would be Christmas, but that would be a small part of the total year. Like, most of the bigger conferences in Dundalk meet weekly, and they do calls weekly. And some of them are doing 20, 30 calls per week, the whole year round.
Per person?
Christmas,
each person,
per conference, you know. But each call is not just 5 or 10 minutes. It's more, it depends on the complex nature of the call. You know, apart from helping with food and money and health bills, etc., there's a whole assistance required on occasions where people just want to talk about their problems.
You're dealing with loneliness.
You're dealing with a huge range of complex emotions, you know. So, in time, you can't rush through somebody's hardship. And
I suppose it gets to the stage as well where people can't rely on the Vincent de Paul people to call to them every week because, you know.
Well, we don't encourage calling every week, you know, because that's not the way to help people, you know. We try to encourage self sufficiency. Efficiency over a period of time, but we do step into the breach for an awful lot of problems, and for a lot of people, something like a washing machine ceasing to exist, or an oven blowing up, or something that most people can take in their stride, or relatively in their stride, that's the end of the world, and that can set off a cycle. Where something has to give to pay for the new washing machine, the kids don't get fed properly, the ESB bill isn't paid, and that's what we would see all the time. This couple of hundred quid, that all it takes to solve the problem, just isn't there. You
know? We could see a lot of that ourselves, because when we were delivering the food hampers around Christmas time, a lot of it by way of introductions from yourselves and the social service, we could see the poverty that was out there as well.
But one area where we would have done in Dundalk, particularly in the Dundalk area, in the last 5 or 6 years, is due to the receipt of several very, very large substantial legacies, we were able to devote a lot of money to education, and we would have, in the last 5 years, we would have spent about €1 million on education in the Dundalk area, and we do that through three different schemes. One is in the Jesh Band 1 primary schools, we support them, we have supported them with just in a quiet way, with problems they would have in the school, and the introduction of the Incredible Years program, we would have helped there too. We also have managed to help all the secondary schools in the Dundalk area every year, where we would put in money in a quiet way to help with school books, with a whole range of services.
The rest of the students wouldn't actually know.
Nobody would know about it. It could be as something like a school tour, a child being denied where the family might not have the money to let them go on a school tour, and to a 14 or 15 year old that could be absolute desolation. So we provide money to the secondary schools to bridge these gaps that they don't. So, and the biggest one of all is the third level grants.
So there's no embarrassment from the kids' point of view.
Oh no, the kids
know, nobody
would
else
not
knows
know,
what's happening.
No.
Either,
and we've been able to help about 150 children a year for the last 5 years. In the with their back to college expenses, and that's very important, because when the time comes and the new education, the SUSE system that exists for grants is only bedding in properly now.
I hear Joe Duffy complaining about that on his Liveline programme.
But we would have seen where, even if you do qualify for the higher education grants, that there is a lag or a delay in paying them. And children are going off to college in different parts of the country and they wouldn't have the deposit for a flat, or they wouldn't have the money to buy books. So we spend about 130 or 40,000 a year helping.
Would you follow that through from year one right through?
We have followed it through with people. Now, it's only, we can't guarantee next year that we can do it.
Right.
But we have got legacies and we have ring-fenced that money and that has gone on education, because we do really believe that possibly the best way to get out of long-term poverty is through education. Still is, you know.
And I presume you're like ourselves, like you don't find it that easy to raise money anymore, and not as easy as it used to be.
No, well, I mean, we've a big reliance still on Churchgate collections. We do monthly collections, and at Christmas we do in-church collections. That's still very, very lucrative for us. Subscriptions and donations, business donations and private donations, particularly at Christmas, are still very, very good. We have two shops in Dundalk which are performing very, very well and are very profitable, and that provides money for the conferences as well. And we do a range of fundraising. We do bag packs in Dunn's stores. We do anything. You know, we'd have race nights or different things from time to time. We're under pressure,
You're a bit like ourselves, because, I mean, any time you get a good idea, we had a great idea years ago for a poker classic where we raised about 40,000 one year. And then everybody else gets on the bandwagon kills the thing off.
Everything is, the attention span of the public now for any new idea is pretty short.
Even Rotary now have their Show of Truth, their breakfast every year, they have it. And last year Bank of Ireland had one that morning, and the Geraldines had one, and was it Father Mark O'Hagan is having one this year. So I mean, it all takes away from one of the Rotary's main fundraisers, and I think that's probably common enough amongst all of us in our own different
everybody's
ways.
Everybody's robbing each other's ideas, and you know, they have a lifespan of a couple of years, and then
you have to look for something else.
Some new fad takes over.
Be duck races or something like that sort of
But no, we have been lucky. The public have supported us. You know, I think, you know, we are on the ground. We're a little bit like the GAA. We are sort of in every parish in Ireland, and people know that we carry out our work in a very confidential, quiet way. We're non-judgmental, and, you know.
But I think what people appreciate no more than with ourselves is they know that every penny they give in goes straight back out again.
Right,
you know, there's no big salaries to be paid.
We have no
like
overheads. You know, none.
Yeah, similar to ourselves.
It all goes out, you know. Just, Ty, can I just say something? We are, all, like everybody else, we're always interested in new members, and we're having an open evening in the Crown Plaza on the 18th of February.
Okay.
It'll be advertised closer to the date, and we would like to invite anyone who's listening who might be interested in giving a few hours a week to the society to come along to that. It'll be in the Crown Plaza on Thursday, the 18th of February.
Okay. Well,
and just watch the local papers and the local media.
Well, we can give that a mention over the next couple of weeks on our programme as well.
We appreciate
yes. All right.
But,
thanks very much, Liam. Very good of you to come and join us.
Not at all, no.
Update us on what's happening. So, thank you very, very much.
Okay.